Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in Stories for Children Magazine at .org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the World of Ink.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Stories for Children show at BTR World of Ink Network with your host, V.S. Grenier, and myself, Irene Rose. It's truly an honor to be here with you today. It's Monday, March the 11th, 2013, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, Stories for Children can be listened to live every other Monday of the month here on the World of Ink Network. Or you can, of course, listen to it on demand at any time you'd like at the same address or on iTunes. Just search for World of Ink Network, and you'll find our shows on iTunes. The chat room is also open to post your questions today. If you have any call-in questions for our guest, please call 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259.
Thanks, Irene. You always do such a great opening. I was wondrous, but...
Oh, thank you.
So it's good to have you back. We've missed you.
It's been a little while. I missed the show totally.
Yeah, I know. And we will be having, just so our listeners know, and I should probably go through all that, so I probably should open my little thing so I can do that. We will have a Family Matters show with myself, Virginia Grenier, and Irene Roth, and Keisha Burcham. Last month, the officer that we were trying to get on wasn't able to make the show, so we could do the whole gun safety, school safety, gun safety, bully show. Unfortunately, now he's on a leave of absence, so now we're going to try and see if we can find somebody else. But we are going to have a show this month, a Family Matters show, so we will have it. It's just been kind of crazy. And then just kind of what our lineup is for this week in shows. We are not going to have a Good Story is a Good Story tomorrow. As far as I know right now, Marsha Casper-Cook is taking the day off. However, if something comes up and that changes, don't be surprised if all of a sudden there's a show tomorrow. But right now, there's no show planned here at the World of Ink Network. But Wednesday, we have the revamped What is Success show with myself and Bennett Pomerantz. We'll be doing TV show review, and that will be at 10 o'clock Eastern here on the World of Ink. Yeah, I'm excited about it. There's three different shows that I will be talking, unless Bennett has a few that he hasn't told me about yet. But we'll be recapping some of the newer shows that have started this past season on TV, so that'll be a fun show. And then Fran Lewis has book discussion on Thursday. That is at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Her guest is a New York Times best-selling author, Brian Freeman, so that'll be a great show. And then she also has Jeff Riviera on as well, who writes the Flushed series, so that will be a fun show to listen to. And that's pretty much what we have going. And also won't be a It's Storytime Gather Round as well, either this coming Saturday. J.D. Holiday is taking that day off, so that's what we have lined up.
She's got a nerve, eh?
It's spring break here in Utah, so I don't blame the rest of the hosts, even if they're not on spring break. It's that time of year where everybody's starting spring break, and Easter's right around the corner, and Passover, and, it's Passover. Making sure I get the...
Yeah, it's our spring break here too, so in Canada.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, so all the kids are off, so
yeah.
So it's one of those times, So
I'm locked away in the office, so the kids that are out running around But all three of them are here.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm looking at my oldest going, hey, you get to keep your sister.
Because
the show's going on.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, heaven.
Yeah. So anyways, let's get on our show. I'm so excited because you're on the show with me today, Irene. It's been so long.
Oh, it's so exciting.
Yes. So we have a great show today because we haven't had a coming of age story at all on the show, actually. I mean,
no.
we've had Jack Rimmick on the Righty Mama show because that was a woman's contemporary coming of age story. But this is our first young adult coming of age story. So this is exciting. This is different. And it's a mystery. And it covers quite a few, definitely issues I can relate to from high school, but, you know, death being a major one.
Great story.
So let's introduce our guest, which is author Scott R. Casely, and he's the author of, I'm going to tongue-tie myself, Isosceles, which is his debut novel. So welcome to the show, Scott. How are you?
Thank you very much. It's good to be here. How are you both doing today?
We're
good.
We're talking about the weather earlier, and we're of course, you know, rubbing it in for poor Scott about how our weather's warming up.
Mm-hmm.
And yours isn't.
Not yet. I mean, the sun's out. It's teasing us in New England, but, you know.
Well, that's how it is in those northern, you know, East Coast states. They don't like to warm up very well.
I can neither confirm nor deny the weather situation.
Everybody I talk to who lives in New England states always are complaining. Where's the dang sun? Where's the green grass? But then when it does come, it's green.
Yeah. If you like or loathe the weather, wait a minute. That's what we always say.
Well, you know what? And being somebody who's from the Southern California area now lives in, of course, a desert, more of a desert than I was in California. You know, is even though California gets green, it's not really green. You have the blue ocean, in Southern California, you have the blue ocean and the beautiful, most of there's trash on it, sand. But typically your skies are gray, and what we consider green is really surrounded by a lot of cement. Where in the New England area, when it's green, it really is green.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is.
I think
Robert Frost
sun,
area.
See, all that snow and frost is, you know, it's incubating all that beautiful green lushness that the rest of the country wishes it gets.
I'll send some.
Okay.
Or at least I'll take a picture of it and post it online.
Because my gardens never look as good as the gardens I see coming from those houses. I'm like, why? I planted the same plants. I did what they said. It's not as pretty. They're like wilting. Yeah, it's sad. Okay, so, Scott, besides being a debut author, you actually have a huge resume on a bunch of stuff you do. So I would love for you to cover your background because you're not just like some newbie writer. You actually know this industry quite well.
Yeah. I was a filmmaker for a while. I directed a feature film, and I also directed a documentary short and a talk show, and I wrote for an online film magazine for a while. And I'm also a trained stage film and voice actor. I took a class at a place called CP Casting in Boston. And I also took a one-day class with Ernest Thompson, the Oscar-winning screenwriter of On Golden Pond. And I learned how to do voice acting from Jordan Rich of Chart Productions in the greater Boston area.
Wow.
So, and my novel actually started out as a screenplay. So.
Hey, really?
It means,
wow.
I'm thinking, you know, you top us. And I'm going, and I feel like such a novice when it comes to, like, this interview.
No, don't. Trust me.
Flip the tables here. Maybe you should be interviewing us.
Yeah.
I can use my voice skills that way.
Yeah. There you go. So let's talk about your book because I'm going to be honest. I haven't, which is really sad since I'm helping you with your virtual tour through the World of Ink Network, but I haven't delved into the book yet. I've skimmed through it, but I haven't, like, sat down, like, really read it page, you know, from cover to cover.
That's okay.
But I was talking with author Tracy McDonald. She's a blind author.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been a guest on our show, so people who are listening that listen to all of our shows will go, oh, yeah, you've had Tracy on the show. She lives, like, really close to me. And I was just talking to her, actually, the other day, because her being a blind author, you know, she listens to all the books when we do the tours, because she's one of the reviewers as well for the tours. But she doesn't do, like, a book review. She does, like, a more of an author/book review, because she has to listen to the book. So she comes at a very different perspective.
Yeah.
When she looks at people's story structure.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, of course, singing your praises.
Very nice.
Course,
I appreciate that very much.
Praises, but she was singing your praises. And she was really, at first she was like, okay, you know, this is a typical coming of age story. And then she got to the end of the story, she was just, I don't even know what word to use to even describe how what she was telling me on the phone, but she was very excited with how, and that's not even a good word to probably use either, and I don't want to say amazed either, because that's not like, oh, you didn't know what you were doing either.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just surprised. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, I wouldn't even know what word to use for it, but the way you wrap it all up in the end, and I don't want to give away the ending, so I won't, but when you, the way you wrapped it up in the ending, she was like, wow, it was amazing. And she's like, everything, even like places where she's like, okay, I understand this, but where does this tie in?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you did a phenomenal job from what she said in tying everything and your closing, of course, statement that you make really hit home.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much, Tracy.
And so now everybody's going, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, I
curious.
Can certainly know that. Yeah, I'm like, it is quite interesting. It really is.
I read it too. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
So I'm sure Irene's wearing the same thing. When you're sitting down plotting out the story, did you have that ending already in mind, or did it just kind of evolve as?
I had the basic gist of the ending. And of course it's evolved quite a bit. But the very last moment of the very last page, that's been with me all along.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't you share with everybody what would be your elevator pitch of your book? So they go like, okay, well, what is Isosceles about? Obviously Isosceles, they're going, I know it's a type of triangle.
Okay.
That's all they're getting probably from this conversation.
Okay. Well, the novel starts off about a guy who named Sean McIntyre. He's 19 years old, and he wakes up and he has to use the restroom, and the bathroom door is locked because his best friend has stayed the night over, and he's going to take a shower, or so he thinks. And then he finally breaks into the bathroom when his best friend won't answer and finds him dead in the bathroom. And he's confused. He doesn't know what happened. He knows he did it himself, but he doesn't know if it was an accident or if it was suicide. And on the back of the phone, the toilet, sitting there on the basin, is a cell phone that reads, missed call from Madeline Edwards. So we want to know, Sean wants to know why this happened. And then we go back in time from the next chapter on, 13 years to when they were 6 years old, when they met in the first grade, and then carries them up to this horrific event, and then what happens after Trey's funeral and what it means for Sean to come to terms with his demise as well as everybody else in his life.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing that's unique about your novel is most, you know, again, we'll say it's the pirate code of writing. So their guidelines is, you know, usually you have a certain time frame. So most stories are usually in the summer or a school year or, you know, obviously from beginning to end of year. You know, there's a few, of course, exceptions, which are usually, you know, classic known works like obviously Lord of the Rings. We know that did not happen in a year. There's no way you'd walk across the whole entire almost planet.
Right.
In a year
yeah.
Time. So I'm just curious. Were you worried about writing, especially for young adults, a storyline that wasn't encompassed in your typical tighter timeline? I mean, this is over a year's, you know, not just 1 year, but years of an adolescent, you know, going from from child to almost young adult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a long span to cover in a novel. I mean, I know a lot of publishers even get a little leery of that.
Right.
So what was the challenge of that?
Well, I felt that, for me, I'm very much character-driven writer, and mm-hmm. The characters needed to tell their story the way it happened. And ironically, the first character to come to mind was Madeline, and she likes to talk a lot. And she and I really, really enjoyed my time with her. I know this may sound weird, but I spent a lot of time with her in my mind and just having conversations with her. And she has, a part of her character is that she's a counselor and she likes to talk about people's problems. And but she's very hesitant to talk about her own problems. But when she finally spilled to me her problems, she told them in a very linear fashion, and it was spread out over several years. And, but because she was so shy, I used Sean as my narrator to tell the story of her. A lot of it is about her and her reactions to Trey and her reactions to Sean. And the only way to tell it, I felt, was telling the beginning, the middle, and what happened with that bond between Sean and Madeline, Trey and Madeline. And the only way that I felt it could be told was telling it over a several-year period, as opposed to, as you mentioned, a summer or something.
Yeah, no, I understand. And everybody that I've talked to that has read the book, which mm-hmm. is what I'm planning on doing, of course, during my spring break, they have all, you know, said, wow, you know, and these are, of course, our other author friends of mine, that, you know, or book reviewers that I know, and it's like, usually you don't see a book that does this. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's rare, and it's definitely hard to pull, especially when it's more of a contemporary, you know, type setting.
Yeah.
You know, obviously when you're doing the whole Knights of, you know, the Round Table or, you know, dragons and whatever, you can get away with it, or in some mystical world, you know, you can
yeah.
get away with it. But when you're in real time that we can relate to, because it's our own reality pretty much to a degree,
mm-hmm.
You know, it is harder, but everybody was just, they all felt the same way. You couldn't tell the story without saying where they all started and
mm-hmm.
how they all knew each other.
Right.
So I'm just curious, did you have, I mean, you know, a lot of authors, you know, sometimes we pull it from completely out of thin air, but a lot of time we pull from personal experiences or experiences from those around us. Is anything in the book from a realistic event?
I would say there are echoes more than actual reflections of actual mm-hmm. events. Because when I was a kid, I did go roller skating a lot. I went bowling a lot in high school, and I had a lot of friends of both genders, and so that is more reminiscent of my own experience growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shy. Sean is probably closest to me. I was very shy growing up. A lot of people won't be able to believe that now because I'm very outgoing and somebody can say obnoxious now. but I was very shy with, especially with girls. And there's one scene where Sean and Madeline are playing a game called MASH, which is this, if your listeners aren't familiar, it's this game where you write down three people that you're going to end up marrying, like that you'll potentially end up marrying. The first one is the person that you really want to marry, and when you're a kid, it might even be a celebrity. And the second one would be the realistic one. The third one would be someone you never want to marry. And then you have careers like that, and then you have how many kids you're going to have. And you do this whole spiral. And I was such a hopeless romantic from a young age that I believed that that was actually going to be my destiny. So, and in the novel, I make Madeline believing it's the destiny and Sean being the cynic. But when I was playing that, I was like, oh, yeah, this is definitely going to happen. Oh, yeah. So,
I remember that game, by the way.
Do you? Yes?
Yes. So I'm going to date myself with you. Yes.
Don't worry about it.
I'm like, oh, yeah, I know that game.
Yeah.
We've been playing that many times, I should have been paying attention in class.
Yep.
Yep.
We're all guilty of that.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Okay, the reason I was asking, because I know there's been a few people, and even myself, because I know, because I've read the prologue, which is, you know, where it talks about, you know, finding his best friend in the bathroom and stuff.
Yeah.
I actually had a friend my junior year who was gunned down in a drive-by shooting at a party.
Oh,
and,
really? I'm sorry.
Yeah, and my husband even lost a friend, and I won't go into details, only because he doesn't like me talking about him too much on here, and unfortunately there are people who listen to the show that know who he is, so I won't go into details about that. He lost a friend as well in high school due to some very bad circumstances. So I know it's especially now with I was in high school, Columbine happened. Yeah, I'm definitely aging myself. We just had the recent, you know, shooting out in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously between Columbine and the horrific, you know, shooting at the elementary school in Connecticut, you know, there's been other things that have happened between theater shootings and, you know, all other kinds of, you know, crazy stuff. So death seems to, at least with our generation and
mm-hmm.
the generations behind us,
yeah.
Unlike our parents and our grandparents, I mean, yeah, they had death, but not
mm-hmm.
not unlogical death. And I know that's such a weird way of putting it, but, you know, I mean, you had war and you had disease.
No,
and mm-hmm. yeah, you know, stuff that it was horrible things happened, and yes, you still had murders and stuff that happened, but people could make more sense of it
mm-hmm.
than now. Now it seems it's just random and it's just,
oh, it is.
There's no,
yeah.
no reason. I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
no rhyme or reason. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even the people who are being, you know, not that murder should have reason, but I mean, usually back in the old, and I don't want to say old days, but I'm going to use that term anyways, but I'm talking like, you know,
mm-hmm.
70s and older days, your crazy mass serial killers, usually you kind of had an idea of why they were the way they are. I mean, now it just seems like it's anybody, and you're just like, whoa,
mm-hmm.
what the heck? So even though, and I don't want you to talk about, you know, how he, of course, died, because
mm-hmm.
we want to let people read the book and find out for themselves, but
right.
So, touching on that subject, I mean, a lot of people, I think, are either going to know somebody or personally have been in a situation where they've lost somebody
mm-hmm.
close, you know, for whatever reason. Is there something you're hoping readers will take away from that? Because it seems to be a harder, as common as it is now,
mm-hmm.
it seems that more people are having a harder time dealing with those scenarios.
Well, in my experience, a number of people that I went to college with passed
mm-hmm.
away in a relatively short period of time. I was not close with them for the most
mm-hmm.
part. However, they were very young, and when it happened, it just caused me to ask a lot of questions about what death means, what a person's life means, what their death means. And I started thinking about that, and I started thinking about death in general and why certain people get revered after they pass away when they weren't necessarily revered in their lifetime, and why some people are demonized after they pass when in their lifetime they weren't necessarily demonized. And I thought about what this all means, and I thought about how this could be very universal, and I thought of the different ways people deal with people passing away. And I also, in the documentary I did, while it was not about people specifically, it was about pet cemeteries and about mm-hmm. the grief people have for loss of animals. And I thought about the extraordinary power of grief, you know, and how it can lead to other emotions and the whole gamut of emotions. And that also ties into why my story took place over a 13-year period, because when a person passes away, you think about all the things they meant to them. Like, their life passes before your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so by telling this, sorry to be adding on to my previous answer. telling their story over a 13-year period was to show all those moments that Sean is seeing when he sees Trey dead. You know, where it happened for him in an instant, all those memories, I had to tell that story of what was flashing before his eyes.
Yeah.
So, and that's what those deaths bring to me. And I just think about people like, and a recurring theme, it seems, for me in my writing, my film that I directed was about a guy who died just as his life was starting to show promise. And I think about that, you know, when people die young, a lot of times they say, what could have been, you know, and I think about that a lot. And like, I wonder if it's a person saying like, and when they're going, what could have been, I'm wondering if they're thinking, I wonder how I'm going to be remembered, you know, like how would I be remembered if the roles were reversed? So.
Yeah, no, makes sense. And I know a lot of, you know, agents and editors try and steer clear, at least being adults, to some degree, with too much, you know, death in books. I mean, I know it's there, but it's not where you find a lot of books with it. And so I know it's a risk to write a book like that. And trust me, I know, because I'm actually in the process of writing one actually based off my friend being shot.
Oh, really?
Tweaking the story. But I found for me, you know, one reason I wanted to tell the story was because it was therapy for myself. Because I've never, until I started writing, my gosh, almost 8 years ago, I never really talked about Jennifer too much. I mean, people close to me that went to or in high school with me, I pretty much had, I don't want to say I totally lost contact with them, but they'd kind of float in and out of my life because it was just too much of a reminder. When I met my husband, he told me about his friends, so I shared about mine, but that was the extent of the conversation. It didn't go beyond that. and it wasn't until I started writing that him and I actually started talking more about both of us, you know, losing best friends in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been very therapeutic, and for me it's made me face it, because I've actually lost two grandfathers, and I can talk about that way easier than it was losing my best friend, especially because she was younger than me by a year and a half. So, I mean, that's even worse. I mean, it's one thing when you lose somebody who's your age, but when they're even younger than you, you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, you realize, like, life is not the way you think it is as a high school student.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just wondering, you know, I think death is harder for younger, you know, kids than it is for older people.
Mm-hmm.
I just see this a lot of times with some of the students and some of, you know, my family members when they're experiencing death, say, before 18 years old or whatever. It's much, much harder for them to cope with it, or even earlier than that, say, when they're 12 and 13 years old than it is when they're older. So I'm just you captured that very well in your story. How devastating it can be for the child, you know, or the teenager, I should say, to lose a very you know, important person in their lives. So I'm just, you know, wondering, and you, what you were saying too, Virginia, is that you know, when you're younger, it's harder to face these deaths, isn't it, of your close friends? But when you get older, maybe it gets a little easier. I'm not sure. What's your take on that?
When I was 14. A friend of mine passed away from leukemia, and she was 13. And when her funeral happened, it was an open casket, or her wake, I should say. I can't remember now. I'm sorry, but and that was very traumatic for me. You know, and I wrote a poem in high school. It's in the book, actually, called The Unknown, and. It was about my reaction to her passing, and I actually read that at a college years later, and it wasn't until I read that poem at a college that I was able to feel like I could be open about that poem, and I was actually able to have closure to that moment of seeing her in that funeral 3 or 4 years earlier. So.
Yeah, I think it, you know, it really does make a difference for you know, for teens to just get a little bit of a perspective on it, and it's so devastating for, you know, young kids and teens to be losing people that are their friends. Like, I can't even imagine what some of the you know, kids in the school, in the Connecticut school, were going through and are going through right now as a result of losing their friends. You know what I mean?
Oh, great. Yeah.
It's just wow, you know, and it's all, well, very senseless, you know, but it has happened, you know, and of course more and more these days it's happening, sadly. So, you know, I think that your book just places that, you know, very well, and just will help a lot of, you know, kids come to terms with death that is senseless, or, you know, like all death is senseless in a certain respect, even if it is, you know, a person dying because of leukemia, or a person dying in a car accident, or a person dying for any other reason. It's still very, very painful, you know. So I think your book will put that in perspective quite a bit. And
I'm very grateful to you for saying that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, too. I mean, you touch on a lot of, you know, I don't want to say issues, situations that issues just sound so negative. Situations that a lot of adolescents are, you know, are seeing more and more in their lives than I think, you know, we did as kids. I mean, I'm not saying we didn't. I mean, we did. I think our generation was the beginning of a lot of it. But, you know, definitely I don't think the baby boomers saw as much. I'm talking older baby boomers, not the younger generation of baby boomers. And of course their parents and beyond. I don't think I know these things were happening, but not on the scale that is definitely surrounding the youth now. And I'm just curious, so when you sat down to write, I mean, did any of that come to mind, or as the characters just talked to you? And I promise we won't send the white coats to come lock you up.
It's okay. I've heard plenty of other authors say it, so I'm like, okay, I'm safe saying this. It's precedence.
they you know, my characters visit me in the shower all the time, and I know that sounds really weird, but they do.
Anyway, wait for it.
Yeah, every time I take a shower,
I have
her talking. Like,
I have
hey,
the same
you
thing.
Know, but, solitude, shower time, yeah.
Yeah.
Or bath time.
So when you got to each scene where you're dealing with these different situations that, you know, like a lot of our youth, a lot, and not just, and when I say youth, I do not just mean high school. I mean, we're seeing this all the way down to like 10, 12 and 10-year-olds are even starting to experience a lot of these things. Was that going through your mind, or were the characters just talking to you and they were just saying, this is just how it happened?
Well, I think a lot of the reason I did it is because Sean doesn't say a lot. Like, Sean, the narrator, doesn't say a lot out loud. He says things to the reader, but he's basically, it's like kind of like an expository novel without being an expository novel. It's kind of like Perks of Being a Wallflower. I don't know if you're familiar with that book. He writes this character who goes unnamed in the novel, is writing to a friend. Well, that's what I see him doing, and he's telling this story. And I think he's also possibly telling the story. One of the early ideas and one of the earlier incarnations was that Sean was telling this story to the next generation. I can't say what that exactly means until people read the book. But but that was abandoned. But I wanted to have that be like, this is the I wanted the story to be for those people who feel like they're living a lot, they're experiencing a lot, but they're not being heard. And I wanted this to be a way for them to feel like these are things that you can talk about. It's okay to talk about, you know, and these are emotions that we all go through, you know, the first crush, the first rejection, the first love. And, you know, like we see all these stories out there about athletes doing really well, excelling at sports and being first place, and it's great and everything if you're lucky enough to do that. But some people, myself included, were not the best at sports. You know, I was best at keeping up wall space in the gym class. You know, and I wanted people to feel like if you feel like you're not like fitting in and you feel like everybody else is, this book is for you. I want you to feel like you're not the only one who's not fitting in. I wanted you to feel like you can talk about all these things, you know, and social media, I think, is a lot of the reason why a lot more of these feelings are out there with people, you know.
I agree. I mean, because I have a, soon to be 17, he'll be 17 in May, son, and I have a sister who's 15 years younger than me. And so I used to work at Hot Topic, so I get where you're coming from, because I saw what used to be the old punk rock version, you know, the 80s, merge into the whole, you know, emo thing that we have going on.
Yeah, yep.
And so you're right, and it seems as we get more into technology and you have the social media, you know, platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Kids, it's so weird. You're like, you have so much around you and so many ways to connect with everybody,
mm-hmm.
but yet they feel more isolated because
of that. Oh, absolutely.
And sometimes I wonder if it's because it's not as personable.
Exactly. It's ironic.
Yeah.
It's insecure narcissism.
Yeah. And
you know.
So when I was scanning through the book and, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, pitching it out there and, you know, trying to put together what I wanted to cover today on the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was one of the things I picked up so much because I tell you, I go out, you know, to lunch with my son every so often, or I'll just be out and about, you know, just people watching, you know, because that's what we do in this industry. We watch people and absorb everything in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really interesting watching how even in the little emo, and we have Tuacon out here by us, which is a charter arts high school.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody who's, you know, drama, band, art,
yep.
graphics, all of that. So I mean, you have your really eccentric style type kids there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out at lunch just the other day, sitting across from a group of kids, you know, totally the whole emo garb. And there were six of them together. And even though they were sitting there eating lunch together and interacting between each other, you could see, if you really looked in their eyes, how they still felt that even though they felt like they were with their peers, they weren't really
mm-hmm.
a part
they
of their
present.
Peers.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it was like, wow, these are
mm-hmm.
people who supposedly feel just like you because they're other emo kids,
mm-hmm.
and yet you still feel like they don't totally understand who you are either.
Yep. And it's ironic because, you know, they see that in their eyes, but back in the 80s and 90s, people wore sunglasses more often to hide their eyes.
That's true.
Now their eyes are visible, but the pain is still hidden.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It totally is. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of these technologies are doing. They're sort of, you know, skewing and distracting
mm-hmm.
people from really connecting with each other. And then it becomes scary for them to connect when they really should be connecting or want to
mm-hmm.
connect even, you know.
Yeah.
And I see this all the time, too, you know, with high school kids and even college kids. Is that a lot of times they prefer not to talk to each other directly, but they prefer to talk to each other through email, through
mm-hmm.
cell phone. So
well, I've noticed that. It's a social awkwardness,
mm-hmm.
and my husband and I have talked about this quite a bit. And we're very, very different dynamically in the fact, which is weird because I'm like you, Scott. Most people would say, oh, you're very outgoing, Virginia, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't. I when I walk into a scene, most people actually think, and I'm sorry, everybody, I'm going to use the foul language, but most people usually say, oh, I thought you were such a stuck-up bitch, because when I walk in,
mm-hmm.
I walk in, walls completely up,
mm-hmm.
You know, very much, you know, chin held high. But I do that because it, one, protects me, and I can, you know, take and assess
mm-hmm.
the situation. My husband's. He doesn't walk into situations confidently. He
mm-hmm.
comes in more approachable
yep.
Than I do in a situation, but he's very quiet and he doesn't say anything. Unless somebody starts talking to him, then he'll start engaging in conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because him and I were kind of talking about that, about social awkwardness. And he's like, you know, when we were growing up, even though, you know, these were the two types of barriers that we had, they're like, people don't even know how to use that anymore. They don't know. I mean, they honestly don't even know how to do a proper, you know, informal greeting or formal greeting
mm-hmm.
to someone if
oh,
it's
yeah.
not through a computer screen or a smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of sad to see that social awkwardness. And unfortunately, you're right, it's growing more between the youth. So,
I feel like I have three different – this is going to – not because my book is called Isosceles, am I going to mention the triangle metaphor here, but a little helping. when I go into a – place. I'm usually, when I'm amongst my friends, I'm usually trying to be the funny one. I'm always the cut up. I'm always sarcastic. I'm always trying to get people to laugh. Then I go on social media, like Facebook, and because I'm on a fitness quest, I try to motivate people through exercise, people to live their lives in healthier ways and stuff. Then I write this book, which is about such dark subject matter, so people are like, which one's the real you? So I think of that line from I think of the line from Man on the Moon, the Andy Kaufman biopic, where he goes, you don't know the real me, and Courtney Love says, there isn't a real you, and he goes, oh yeah, I forgot.
true, though. I mean, my son says it all the time. Gosh, we're I can't remember why it came up just recently, but we're talking about pedophiles because mm-hmm. he was getting his haircut, and I'll show him different hairstyles anyways, and he was like, no, I can't get that one. It looks like a pedophile. He's like, Mom, don't you know that all the 12-year-old girls on out online are guys or they're FBI agents trying to find all the pedophiles?
Creepy.
It's true. You never know who you're really I mean, they could say they're a girl and be a – and it's true. A lot of guys do play girl characters when they game and stuff. So
mm-hmm.
it's like just because you see a girl avatar does not mean it's a girl.
Right.
Yeah, it was just – it was mm-hmm. kind of – it was yeah. interesting thing to hear coming out of my teenager. I'm going, it's like I knew that, but it was just weird hearing him say that. And it's
Virginia,
true.
That's when you get the notepad out going, can you say that again?
Yeah, exactly.
I won't get this quote right.
But, you know, it's true. I mean, I don't think half the time we even know who we really are because we have to put on so many different hats, so many different...
Personas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When we're out there, depending on, you know, are we at work? Are we on social media? Are we with our family? I mean... My husband looks at me now. It's funny because now that I work, out of home mostly,
mm-hmm.
being a freelancer... He
yep.
looks at me and says, you're not who I, because I'll do stuff or whatever. And he's like, I don't
mm-hmm.
remember being like this when we first got married. I said, well, when we first got married, I was a business professional and I was traveling. I was at fashion shows. I was in suits. I'm like, this is the real me. He's going, uh-huh. He's like, I wish I would have done that 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think because I don't have to put on so many hats anymore, like my real personality, really who I am,
uh-huh.
it shows more. And and I start thinking about it, I'm going, it's true. Who he met was not, you know, I've always known who I was underneath all those layers.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents did because obviously they raised me. But other than that, it's true. You know, how many people really know who I am?
Mm-hmm.
Really know what I think. And honestly, people, I do have a lot of sinister thoughts. I know it doesn't come off on Blog Talk Radio, but I do. And he looks at me, he's like, you know, he's like, you're kind of out there. So I'm like, that's really who I am. But yeah,
uh-huh.
You're right. What I love about, you know, the premise of your book too is even when we think we know who we are
mm-hmm.
ourselves,
yep.
most of the time we don't. And I teach that a lot when I talk to new writers about because I'm like you, Scott. I'm a very character driven author as well.
Yep.
And I always tell people, if you want to be a character-driven author, I found the ones who are strong and
mm-hmm.
have really got that knack down,
yep.
especially like understand character development fully, it's because they're able to look in the mirror and the reflection they see back, they understand who that is looking back at them. The ones who don't, who are still on the quest, are usually better plot-driven writers
mm-hmm.
because they don't even understand themselves 100%. And they just look at you like, wow.
Well, this is going to be a weird way to word it, but I had a surreal reality check about 12 years ago. I played myself in a movie.
Wow.
That was released on home video. And the director was a guy I knew, and when I went in there and I auditioned, he goes, no, I want you to play it a different way. I want you to be more like yourself. So, and I thought I was being myself. And he said, I want you to be, and so when I'm on screen, I see it and I go, I don't know if that's really me. And then my friends go, that's you.
Well, there you go.
I'm like, okay.
Because you're right. Cause and I do, and trust me, I can relate to this because in my mind, and this is going to like totally freak people out, but in my mind, when I think of Virginia,
mm-hmm.
I remember myself when I was 21 years old, how I was, how I
yep.
looked, which was definitely a lot thinner than I am now. I definitely didn't have the little smile lines that I'm getting now in my
mm-hmm.
middle age, you know. And that's who, and that's visually when I think of myself, that's the
yep.
image and all of that around it and the person who went out and danced and partier and blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
That's who I see in my head. And then I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have three kids. I'm married. I'm almost 40. And yeah, that's a size 3 anymore.
Now, let me ask you a question, if I may.
Yeah.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I know you go by V.S. Grenier sometimes and Virginia S. Grenier sometimes.
Yeah.
Are they two different personas?
Oh.
You know, they are.
Mm-hmm.
The V.S., which is the writer side of me,
mm-hmm.
Is definitely it's where I can be creative. It's
mm-hmm.
my artsy side. It's
yep.
the side that's always been there that I've always hid from the world mostly, to
uh-huh.
be honest, that didn't come out until 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few people who saw it, and the ones who did, there was anybody who knew me back when I lived in Pismo Beach because I used to hang out with the surfer crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get very philosophical, which I know probably sounds really weird to everybody right now, but I can't. I can get really deep, crazy out there, philosophical thoughts going. Where you just look at me going, you know, like, are you smoking something?
I remember that from our first phone conversation, actually.
Well, no, and literally, like, the best way to explain it is, like, anytime you watch a movie where people are getting high on pot, which I wasn't, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, when people get high on pot and they, like, get those, like, really out there, like, conversations going.
Oh, yeah.
That's
I call it the...
Go ahead. You call it
I call it the 1 o'clock in the morning conversation.
Yeah, yeah. My husband calls it my silly slappy moment. But that's a side of me I keep very, very hidden because that's actually my most sensitive side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I used my initials for that reason, because I can still kind of hide behind
mm-hmm.
something a little bit.
And people stay away because versus?
Yeah. When I use my whole, and the S, by the way, stands for my maiden name. When
mm-hmm.
I use the Virginia S. Grenier, yeah, it's not my real middle name's Anne.
Oh.
I don't even use that. See, now everybody knows.
That's wonderful. It's great to know all these things.
No, yeah, you guys are getting to know. See, Scott's turning the interview on me. But that's my business
Sorry.
Side. So that's where I can be my alpha personality, my very dominant personality. And
uh-huh.
and as my husband says, you know, manage everybody and make everybody feel like they're only the size of an ant.
No way.
And that's my favorite person. I like that persona because everything I'm really thinking, you have no idea. Like, I can be laughing and really be thinking something really horrendous, and you wouldn't know.
Take notes, Nyrene.
Yeah, everybody's going, oh.
I'm afraid now.
I think I'm safe.
Yeah, so.
You are.
When I'm in that persona, you're right. That's probably the scariest one because you really, my husband says that's when I've turned off the emotional light switch and I
mm-hmm.
have no emotion is what
yeah.
he says. That's how he classifies it.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty bad. But I'm aware, see, the thing is, as you can tell, I'm self-aware of that. It's because after my friend died, I did the whole reality check with myself and that's when I started realizing these things about me. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you've got, huh?
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Because I see, I can do the same with my name too, Virginia. I can put I S.
Go ahead,
I wrote, and then
yours.
Because S is my maiden name too. Isn't this something? You're giving me lots of ideas here.
Nice.
Oh my goodness!
That.
This is hilarious. Great.
So I'm curious, Scott, getting back
yes.
onto your book and Isosceles. Are
okay.
You, because of the way, and like I said, I haven't read it cover to cover, so this is just me totally guessing, and I
mm-hmm.
encourage you if I'm wrong, but is it open to where you can branch off from that and maybe write a sequel, or is it definitely a closed-ended book and you're not going to ever go back and address anything that may have been left open-ended at all?
I don't see a sequel, the possibility for a sequel to it. I see it very self-contained, and I can think of an idea that I would do if I was asked to do a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
However, my heart is not in revisiting these characters right now.
I guess you're just finished with everyone, right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, trade then.
Yeah.
Well, unless you wanted to go back to, well, I guess no trade would be done. You went all the way back to his beginning, so he's done.
Right.
Unless he's haunting someone. Sorry. You know, paranormal, it happens.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen.
Paranormal is in, right?
Yep.
Well, I have Jennifer doing that, actually, in her book, the book that I'm writing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, instead of revisiting her life, because I didn't meet her until we were in high school, because I went to three different high schools. So with her story, that's what it is. She talks from beyond the grave to help solve her murder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a great thought.
So not that I think she'd ever come back in another book, because I don't know what more she could help solve.
Right.
That's one thing, you never know.
Yeah.
Paranormal stories can happen, but yeah. So, what are you planning on doing from here? I mean, I know obviously, of course, you're out. Your books newly released. You're of course promoting it. But is there any works in process right now that you're working on? Or
yeah, I'm working on a second book right now, actually. I'm using a technique, and I might be pronouncing it wrong. I've heard it pronounced two different ways: polyphony or polyphony. That I discovered reading A Visit from the Goon Squad by Jennifer Egan. And it's basically, it comes from music, and it was later brought into literature by a guy named Vladimir Bakhtin, who discovered it, I believe, and he said that Dostoevsky used it, Virginia Woolf used it once, and it's been used, it's different points of view, and a character from that you can, it's third person limited. Each chapter is third-person limited, and characters from previous chapters can interact in successive chapters, but you don't go into their heads. You just always stay to one person's head the entire time.
Right.
That's hard to write. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's been a challenge. I'm holding together three different ideas. I had developed a storyline that was going to be potentially an internet series, but it never happened. So I'm using an idea from that, an idea that I started to workshop in a writer's group that I'm in, and as well as a short story. I'm using two main characters, one woman, one man, and the woman was from the Net series, and the male character actually started in a story I wrote in the third grade. So,
great.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
and it's just
cool.
Funny trying to translate from his 8-year-old mindset to 25. So I mean, not 25. Yeah, up to 25. So, and that actually takes place in a shorter time frame. That actually takes place in a 3.5-month period.
Oh wow, that is tight.
Yeah.
I think the tightest book I've read so far has been within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
After Hello is the name of the book, and it's 24. It's the whole thing, 24 hours.
Really? Wow.
Wow. Yeah, that's not easy to do.
No.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Lisa Magnum is the author of that, out of Shadow Mountain. And, I picked it up when I saw that because I was like, that's, I mean, like you're talking about, 3 months is hard as it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
What's the author's name again, Virginia?
Lisa Magnum. Magnum, sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
is
I've got
to
pick that one up.
Yeah, it's a good book to read when you're trying to. That's why I picked it up for that reason, was to learn how to write in a tight time frame like that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because it's not. The only time I've done, you know, time frames where they're short are usually short stories. So it's 2,000 words, you know, or under.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, obviously that's easy to do because it's usually, you know, very few, one scene to very few scenes to do. But to pull a book off, I haven't attempted that, so power to you.
Thank you.
On
yeah, it's going to be, Isosceles is divided into four parts. This is going to be divided into three parts, so one per month.
Oh,
so,
cool. Sounds like it. Now, with your background in film, even though it's documentary, have you thought about, you know, the whole book-to-movie pursuit eventually with Isosceles? I mean, this type of coming-of-age story, again, I guess I haven't read it cover to cover, but just from listening to, you know, you talk about it, Irene, who's read it, Tracy, who's read it, and other people, you know, it's one of those that I think could be a pretty good dramatic film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would like that. You know, I'd like to be on HBO or Showtime with it. I'd like it to be on cable television, actually.
So one of their kind of, you know, movie production kind of.
Correct. Like a mini series, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
well, I think it would need to be with 13 years.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and like I said, it's four parts, so I'd like it to be like a 4-night thing. So.
Yeah. That would be
so
neat.
Kind of like, oh my gosh, and I can't think of the name of the dang movie. It has love in it, doesn't it? Gosh.
Oh, my goodness. I know which one you mean, isn't it?
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
it's that dramatic miniseries. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I know.
I can't.
It just won't come to me. I want it.
Too.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will tell me later, watch. We'll pop someone will, like, make a comment in our chat room probably and remind me what it is.
Right.
It's not Lonesome Dove either. No, what is it?
Who's in it?
Something like that, though.
I'm on my computer. I can IMDb it if you want.
I could too if I wanted to really do it. I can't think of what it's called.
Okay.
Oh, anyways, it's a love one, and it's bugging me. It's
yeah.
a romantic drama, and I can
mm-hmm.
and I can totally see the actors' names. I can't even think of their names, who they are either. I remember my mom. Oh gosh, it's right there too. Oh wow, hopefully it'll come to me.
But I did write a screenplay for it, which
that's
cool. Yeah, it started out as a screenplay until I met my editor, and she convinced me to turn it into a novel. So.
Oh, so it's one of those.
Yeah.
That's why
yep.
it's so tightly written. That's why we keep telling me it's like really, you know, tightly written.
Mm-hmm.
It's that screenwriter background. You know, I've heard about when you write, and I've heard a lot of writers talk about this. We've had Jack Wermick on who also has a screenwriting background,
mm-hmm.
And he's very. Lyrical in his writing too, because he loves music. I don't know. Yeah, he is a musician as well. So
mm-hmm.
he applies the like you're talking about, like Virginia Woolf and all those guys, how they use the music,
mm-hmm.
you know, format and looping and telling a story, because he
yep.
does that as well. Do you find having because you can visualize and you're used to writing versus you know mapping out the whole plot and then filling in you know the subplots and all of that, that actually writing by scene and doing that kind of a plot structure is easier
for Isosceles? Absolutely. And because I was able to, when I go to write a chapter, I wouldn't write out an outline, but I would plan out like how the chapter would begin and how it would end.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew when other characters would appear on the scene, and I could visualize how to tell like their emotions. One of my biggest thing was the translation from being a screenwriter to a novelist that I had difficulty with at first was I was doing the age-old stop telling me and show me, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I was giving too much away in dialogue, and then my editor dialed that back and said, this is how you do it for a novel, you know, so I was
mm-hmm.
So that worked very well with Isosceles. However, with the new book, I'm going to be writing an outline for it. I've written some things out, like very bare bones, but I want to outline it to
mm.
challenge myself that way. So.
Yeah. It is good, I think, to learn the different techniques. Cause
yeah.
And at least from what I've experienced, and I mean, I'm like a huge Stephen King fan. I mention
mm-hmm.
that a lot on a lot of these shows.
Yeah.
That's one thing I think that I love about his novels, depending on, you know, if he's writing a thriller or the horror, you know, whatever, the suspense, you know, storylines, is because I think he does that too. You know, you have to, certain books, you can't always use the same formula as a writer.
Oh, yeah.
For every book.
Mm-hmm.
It just, because it doesn't make, it's the same with, you know, writing third person, like you were talking about earlier about, you know, third person limited versus third person where you can have multiple points of view, or first person, you know, first
right.
person past tense, first person present tense.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a story and I took it in and, you know, just to get some feedback in a reading. And it was actually Lisa who wrote After Hello. She walked up to me and she said, I like the idea, but the first person present tense isn't working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
yep.
like, oh, I didn't even think of that, you know, because
yep.
I'm thinking of me being there as it's happening, because that's how I was writing it, because that's how I'm seeing it in my head, but her hearing it read wasn't
didn't translate.
Yeah, so I'm now going back and writing it in all different,
yeah.
you know, all different ways, you know, in first person and in third person, and
oh, boy,
doing readings
tough.
Again.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Well, because then I can find what is the right voice for the book. Because I think sometimes
yeah.
it's like, you know, like you were talking about how you have, you know, if you had, I can't remember the girl's name in
Madeline.
The story. Madeline telling the story. I mean, it wouldn't work in her voice,
mm-hmm.
you know, her
no.
telling the story because of her personality. And, you know, So even though it's told in a third person, it's more of a third person narrative versus
mm-hmm.
even third person, you know, limited or multiple points of view. I mean, I think, you know, because and there's some books you can't have
mm-hmm.
the narrator talking straight to the reader because the reader's going, why are you talking to me?
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you don't
and
want the narrator to tell too much either.
Yeah,
no.
You know, so
and
sometimes you want
risk,
the
isn't it?
Yeah, and sometimes the narration's there, but the narrator's completely silent, they're invisible. But then you need, and then you know, like you're saying for your story, he needs to be visible because
yeah.
he's
oh,
part
yeah.
of it. So I think that's great that you're doing that you're challenging yourself that way as a writer because it's only going to make you stronger and find the right tone and voice for your book. So that's great.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I started telling, my first time I was telling stories was actually not written. It was oral. I was telling stories into a tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have two imaginary friends, and I know it sounds silly, but I was 4 years old to give myself some justification for it. And I used to tell their adventures onto a tape recorder. And I would vary it. I would switch it back and forth from first person to third person. And and I would do voices. So I would, like, do voices for both of them. And then I would go and tell it a third way. I would tell it as if they were being interviewed where the interviewer was silent.
Hmm.
So.
Interesting.
That's amazing. Those are great things to keep in mind for writers because a lot of times, you know, if you step out of what you're doing, your immediate mold, and moving to those various other perspectives, you can get a lot of, you know, background on what you're trying to do as, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the novel, which is great. Because I know
yeah.
with one of my first novels that I wrote, I wrote it in first person too, and then all of a sudden when I submitted it to one of the publishers,
mm-hmm.
one thing the editor did was write back, and she said, why don't you try writing it in third person and then submit it?
Yeah.
So that's what I've been really busy doing. So
mm-hmm.
it's been a real challenge for me, too, because I found that some of the key parts of the novel had to change, too, because
mm-hmm.
There was more emphasis on, you know, on different things when I was writing it from the first person as opposed to writing it from the third person. So,
oh, absolutely.
It's been quite a learning curve for me. So it's,
mm-hmm.
it's been that way too. So I guess you know, you learn quite a bit about writing too when you write it from both perspectives and just see what's what. You know. So.
I think also mixing it up too builds up your confidence to do more things
yeah.
too, because
exactly.
and that way when like if it doesn't. Like in my experience and a lot of other writers' experiences, rejection was my constant email. My email would go off, oh, great, I got an email. Oh, that's rejection. But then as you keep learning different techniques, you know, like Ray, I remember hearing that Ray Bradbury used to, like, I don't know how true it was. I'd heard that he decorated his walls with rejection slips.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
You know,
and
it's like,
too.
What's that?
And a lot of other authors,
oh,
too.
Oh, absolutely, you know, and I think the more we learn, the more we learn to evolve, the better writers we be, the better chance we have of success, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we only stick to one certain way of doing things and we get rejected, we take it as a personal rejection.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and a lot of times rejections can be, you know, real winning and sort of, you know, learning experiences. I know for myself, I take all those letters, and unless they're one-liners, which happens too from time to time, but if your manuscript is worth something, that's something that one of the ladies in my critique group said, is that, you know, if the editor really takes the time to write to you, it's because your manuscript had some, you know, merit to it.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you should definitely work on it, you know, and take, you know, as many of the comments to make the manuscript better, you know, and that's what I'm trying to do. Of course, that's what I've done in academe. I'm well published in academe, but
mm-hmm.
and that was easy for me, but it wasn't easy at first, I must say.
Right.
But now when I compare it to novel writing, you know, I'm going through the same kind of learning curve for this, you know, so,
mm-hmm.
and again, you know, way back then when I was trying to break into print academically, I did the same thing. I took a lot of the comments from potential publishers and took it to heart and made the manuscript better and resubmitted it. And then, of course, it got published. So
mm-hmm.
It's just that sense of determination and perspicacity that's hard for a beginning writer that we all have to learn, you know, learning through comments,
mm-hmm.
you know, learning through revision and learning a lot about ourselves as writers that way.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah.
No.
When I was a kid, I asked out a lot of girls. You know, I got turned down a lot of times. So, you know, I dealt with rejection from a young age.
You know, so I think you need to write a book about the motivation of writing, because you got some great analogies.
Yep.
I don't know why you're afraid of rejection. If you're a guy, didn't you get enough rejections when you asked a girl out?
Yep. I just wrote a blog entry about that, actually.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you. Yep.
Well, where can our listeners find out more about you and iSoft, please?
I'm sorry? Can you repeat the question?
Oh, where can our listeners find out more about you and your book, iSoftly?
Okay, well, I have a Facebook page. It is facebook.com/ScottRCaseley, C-A-S as in Sam, E-L-E-Y, writer, and that's my Facebook page. And I also I'm on Twitter, and that's just at ScottRCaseley, and I have a blog. It's pretty scant right now, but I'm going to be adding more entries in the coming weeks, and that is ScottRCaseleyAuthor.com.
Okay.
Great.
That's great. And then, of course, you know, if our listeners don't want to sit there and play this back a bazillion times when it's in podcast mode, they can also go to theworldofinknetwork.com. And if you click on the tab Authors on Tour, you'll see Scott's picture and the link to his tour page and all the information's there, as well, your links and all the different stops you will have throughout March and April. So, so we have more coming from Scott in the upcoming weeks.
I'm very excited
about that. Yeah, very excited too, because you have quite a few guest posts, interviews, and quite a few book reviews lined up. So I'm looking forward to following along.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great having you on the show, Scott. Is there anything you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
I would just like to say thank you very much to both of you for allowing me to be on your show. It was a great joy. And I would like to say to the listeners out there, if you've got your pen in your hand, or you put the pen down, pick it back up, or make sure there's ink in that pen, because you got a story to tell, and you can tell that story, because everybody has a story, and it's worth listening to.
Oh, how great.
I was waiting for you to say, buy my book.
I tried to put that in subliminally. It didn't work.
No.
No, but seriously, write with your heart. Because you can't go wrong with that.
Those are great words to leave with there, because it's true. I think sometimes I think we're our biggest critics sometimes, and
absolutely,
we're the reason why we fail versus other people.
And make sure when you're your own worst critic, that's first person, okay, not third person, because not everybody's saying that about you.
That's a great observation.
Yeah. Well, it's been great having you on the show, Scott, and we'll be following your tour, of course, and the World of Ink will be promoting it all over everything that social media. So anybody who follows the World of Ink, they'll hear more about what's going on with you and iSoftly's, and we wish you much success. And I'm looking forward to your works in progress. They sound interesting.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah,
well, you have a great
getting to know you a little bit more too during the tours. So certainly you'll have a few stops on my blogs as well. So
great, very great. I look forward to that.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, you take care. All right.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
And then, just so our listeners know, on Wednesday this week at 10 p.m. Eastern Time is the What Is Success Show with myself, Virginia S. Grenier, with Bennett Pomerantz, and we will be talking about some of the debut TV shows that are out that are wrapping up or halfway through their season. So that will be fun. One of them, and I can tell you right now, is going to be the show The Americans. So we'll be talking about that. That's an interesting one. So anybody who's into politics and is watching that show, we definitely want you to call in on Wednesday night and share your opinion on that.
Yep.
So, because we're going to be talking about its plot line and the character development and all of that as well. So, that's one of the shows we'll be talking about. And it's been great having you back, Irene. I missed you.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
Yes. So, and you'll have to keep us posted on what's happening with your books, because I know you have quite a few that are in the pipeline. So
yes, they are. I guess I'm busy writing. Oh dear.
Yeah.
I guess we all are as authors, aren't we, Virginia?
Yes, we are. I don't know very many authors that's all they do is get to write, except for, I guess, the big guys. Even then, they're not just writing, because they have to deal with their books go to movies. So they're busy plugging away as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we want to wish everybody a safe week, and for those who are in spring break, to not get too crazy during spring break, and the ones that have spring break coming up, to stay safe as well. And we thank you for listening to the Stories for Children show, which is a featured show on with the World of Ink Network, which is part of Blog Talk Radio. And we want to just give a call out to Blog Talk Radio and thank them for featuring our network and having us as one of their featured network hosts, because we really enjoy being here and all the different types of shows we bring you. And if anybody ever has a suggestion on a show topic or a type of show they'd like to see, you can always contact us through Blog Talk Radio, through our show page, and we will take it into consideration if it's not a show that we do here on Stories for Children. You know, we have so many other shows like A Good Story is a Good Story, The Writing Mama, What is Success, Book Discussions, It's Storytime, Gather Round, and we will be actually having a new show starting up with us as well. I will leave it to Marcia to announce that later next week, but we're excited, so we're going to be bringing on another host, so we're excited about that as well. So anyway, sure. Thank you for listening to us, and take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Have a good afternoon, everyone.
Follow me to the World of Ink.